May it please the court.
You may proceed.
At its core, financial responsibility laws and contracts of insurance have one key attribute that they share, and that is if you take financial responsibility, we'll provide protection. As far back as Halpin, obviously, the Financial Responsibility Act that we're talking about here was key to the fact that it would protect an injured, somebody that was injured as a result of the motor vehicle on a highway. However, what is also clear is that the Financial Responsibility Act protects the owners and operators of that motor vehicle if they take financial responsibility. Now, as I've introduced, Jennifer McConville, the person who took responsibility and bought the liability insurance, and Mark Karsik, my client, the one that was seriously injured in the wreck, are both appellants. And what we're doing here is we're asking this court to reaffirm both the rule and the reason that you announced in Hargrave. At the conclusion, page 92, what you indicated was what Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act requires in the state of Missouri is that each valid owner's or operator's policy apply the minimum limits specified.
Does it make a difference that in Hargrave there were two different insurers?
I do not believe that it does. I believe that the purpose of insurance and the purpose of the financial responsibility law is, again, protection, the assignment of risk, and being able to assign that and state that there is financial responsibility. We have, for example, in Hargrave, as in Karsik, two different insureds, two different vehicles. Each of those do apply. Now, the rule that American Family is advocating and saying that is still here is that as soon as there is one owner's policy, so they're not making that distinction. They're saying as soon as there is one single owner's policy, all other statutory limit disappears from all other Missouri insurance. One owner's policy. That's
but she was not just happened to be insured. She was specifically insured under that owner's policy. Is that correct? Separately?
In which case? In the Hargrave case?
In the current case.
In the current case, she was specifically insured under her policy of insurance.
And was that a separate policy?
That
from
was
the
a
pen?
Separate policy of insurance that she procured.
So there were
own
there
money.
Were two different policies.
There
here.
Are two different okay. policies. Like Hargrave, two insureds, two vehicles, and the Act said, and the Hargrave Act said that there would be each of those would apply, both. And in fact, what Hargrave also did was they overruled the case of Shelton versus Haney, where there was specifically two different insurers, three different vehicles. Each of the three vehicles apply, and they didn't even say whether it was the same or a different insurance company in that case as well. Hargrave should apply as opposed to the rule of once there is a single owner's policy, all other protection disappears. And the reason is that it would have the ironic effect of saying that if we have the one owner's apply, it's going to decrease protection to the very people who exercise financial responsibility to buy a liability policy. And the fear I see in the brief is that we're doing this because we're afraid that somebody else might be financially irresponsible, that we may have this hypothetical tail wagging the dog, there's somebody out there having 10 vehicles and only insuring one. Hargrave should apply. And Hargrave should apply for four different reasons. First of all, it is the most current Supreme Court case, and therefore controlling over Clark. Number two, it is truer to the purpose of the statute itself, and that statute is financial responsibility. That statute says we're going to provide protection. Number three, it is also truer to the legislative language. Now, American Standard or American Family, I think they're two sides of the same coin. They're at least related. They were here in Halpin. They were here in Hargrave. They're here now. And essentially what they said is, to the Hargrave court, there should only be one owner's policy, and that's all there is. And you, the Hargrave court, then said there is no, in fact, the language you specifically indicated when they said there should only be one single policy. The Hargrave court said there is no language in Section 303.190 that would restrict the minimum liability payments to a single insurance policy. There are no words anywhere in the statutory scheme of the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Law that would provide that an insured party is to receive only one statutory amount of $25,000 in compensation if they're insured under multiple policies.
Mr. Vander, let me ask you this question. In this case, the person who purchased the coverage for which you're seeking did not own a vehicle at all, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So how could it be anything other than an operator's policy? How can you sell somebody who doesn't own a car an owner's policy?
I think that's an excellent question. I believe that it is an operator's policy, and that will go to what their argument is. What their argument is that Jennifer McConville's policy is an owner's policy of liability insurance. And if I could respond to that, Your Honor, I think Grammar 101 answers that question, which is an operator apostrophe S policy of liability insurance. What does that mean? An apostrophe is a punctuation mark indicating a possessive case. And so what you have to do is you have to go to the statute and say, what is the definition of a policy of insurance possessed by an operator?
All right. And there are some people who are financially responsible who don't own a car.
Correct.
If they want to make sure that they're insured when they're on the road and they don't check with everybody they borrow a car from, their only way to ensure that they're financially responsible is to buy an operator's policy.
Precisely. In other words, the amount of insurance and protection that Jennifer McConville has is exactly the same, okay, according to American Family, right, as if she didn't buy insurance at all.
Right.
Zero.
So if she was one of those people that wanted to be financially responsible and paid her own premium, what coverage would she ever get if the owners of the car had also assume their own personal financial responsibility? Would she ever be paying for anything?
It seems to me to be illusory. And in fact, if you have the hypothetical of her mom not exercising responsibility and her mom not having that insurance, that's exactly what their law would do. It would be up in the air and she would have no responsibility at all.
You're not claiming under this she could recover as an owner and an operator. She's not trying to recover twice under her policy.
She is not. It is either an owner, an operator, or an owner-operator.
But you get $125,000 under,
correct,
that policy, but there's $25,000 under the parents' policy as owners also.
That is correct. And that's what this court said when you said each and every valid owner's or operator's policies. So it's not a combination. You're not going to be able to stack within,
right,
it,
right,
itself.
Exactly.
So what is your position regarding Clark? Do we need to overrule it, or can it be distinguished?
Well, I think it can be distinguished if we really need to go back to, quote, stacking. The traditional stacking facts would involve a situation where you have a single insured, multiple policies, or multiple vehicles, whereas here in Hargrave and here in Carsick, you have multiple insureds, multiple vehicles, and multiple policies.
It's really not a stacking case.
I don't think
it
is. I truly do not think it is. I believe that what Hargrave has said is there is no statutory language that somehow indicates that whether or not this individual policy is contingent upon whether some other policy applies. It doesn't matter. What it says is each valid owner's or operator's policy applies. So do you overrule it? I obviously that's not for me to say. I will say that it's interesting because American Family in its brief said that it would defy logic and precedence to suggest that it was overruled, and yet there's only one Missouri Bar article that they cited, and that was the exact same thing that MoBar article said. Have you, in fact, in Hargrave, overruled Clark? And that it's not just a gotcha point. It's that MoBar article also analyzed the reason behind Clark. And what Clark did was, it said, let's take a policy that is written specific to a person, like an uninsured motorist. We will say that is, quote, stackable, as opposed to a policy that would be written specifically with regard to property, that is a motor vehicle. That is not, quote, stackable. And then the Clark turns around and says, and there's both owners operators. And so the MoBar article says, well, how can that be? Because you have completely belied the distinction, if that's really a distinction. But Judge, I agree. I don't think this is truly a stacking case. because I think what Hargrave says is each policy either rises or falls on its own. There is no contingency language in the statute about this. It says if it is valid, and it is in Missouri, it either provides it or it doesn't. And, in fact, in the Hargrave case, not only did you apply it to two vehicles and two insureds and two policies, each of which apply, you also did it specifically with regard to the Shelter versus Haney case, where you have two people, three vehicles, three apply. And you'll also notice that in each one of these cases where it does apply, it was a child driving a car by a parent and then having some other type of policies. Now, let me address the argument which I think is the basis of the fear and must have been the reason that they included the MOBA article that itself says Hargrave overrules Clark, and that is this fear of one person going out there and buying 10 cars and insuring one. Because I gather when they're talking about marketplace and perverse incentives and all of that, that's really the essence of what they're talking about. And my position is this. My position is that, number one, you can't even get a title without insurance. Number two, it's a complete hypothetical. It has nothing to do with Jennifer McConville. Jennifer McConville is in a family with four cars. They were sold, and you saw it in the policy, they were sold a Missouri family car policy. American Family collects four premiums on four cars. So it has nothing to do with the facts at bar. But even if it did, even if you hypothetically assume somewhere that somebody is doing that, I know of no case anywhere that would indicate that a person, because what you would have to be doing is you would have to be committing a crime to do what they are proposing. You would have to be committing a Class C misdemeanor by trying to operate a car that you own without insurance. And so, what they would have to fear is this person would go out there, commit a crime, and then try to come back and say, you know what, now we get insurance from
it. But if I understand you, you're asking that we adopt a rule that says if you have a separate policy or pay a separate premium for coverage, you get one minimum financial responsibility amount. So that wouldn't apply in that situation anyway, if that's how the opinion were structured, if we happen to agree with your position.
Absolutely. And even if you went further and said you have to pay all 10 even though you insured one, which would never happen. But if that's like a hypothetical law school examination, but if in fact that would happen, the statute itself says in 303.198 that if American Family has to pay something that they otherwise would not have to pay because of this particular statute, they get reimbursed in any event. So it is a complete and utter non-issue in this particular case.
Are there any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the court, it's my honor to appear on behalf of Respondent American Family Mutual Insurance Company before this high court. Judge, I respectfully disagree with my adversary. I do submit to this court that the appellants are asking this court to reconsider law of this state that's been around for over 14 years. In Clark, this court determined the validity of a stacking exclusion and whether this exclusion was contrary to Missouri public policy. It applied a two-step analysis. It determined that an exclusion effectively precluded stacking, and it determined that the prohibition on stacking did not violate Missouri public policy. Just like Clark, the accident vehicle policy met the minimum definitional requirements of an owner's policy under the MVFRL.
But she had a separate operator's policy, and you would give her zero credit for her premium. She would get nothing for it under your interpretation.
Your Honor, she did not have an operator's policy as defined by the MVFRL. The MVFRL provides that a person can comply with the mandates of the MVFRL by purchasing a motor vehicle liability policy, which is either an owner's or an operator's policy.
That kind of begs the question. As I understand it, the facts in this case are not in dispute. This young lady did not own a car, correct? She did not own a car.
That's correct.
Okay. So your company, of course, can issue owner's policies or they can issue operator's policies. But what they've in effect decided to do is do a one policy fits all, correct? The policy here has provisions for owners and operators.
This is the two policies that issues.
The one's already paid. We're talking about your policy.
They're both American Family policy. They're identical, Your Honor.
Right. But they belong to different people who pay different premiums. So my question really is pretty basic. How your agent, if you don't own a car and you purchase the policy, how can it be anything other than an operator's policy?
Your Honor, both of these policies, just as they did in Clark, meet the minimal definitional requirements of an owner's, not an operator's policy. An operator's policy
does an operator's policy exist for American Family? It sounds like it can't.
I don't know offhand if there is an operator's policy. I can submit
to
this court.
Well, why does it say owner's and operator's policy and defines both? I mean, that's what Judge Fisher said.
If somebody comes into that agent and says, I don't own a car, I want an operator's policy, isn't it true they get the same policy that was issued in this case?
No, Your Honor. Exclusion number 9, which limits the use of the vehicles that are owned by other residents of the household but not owned by the insured Jennifer McConville, is proof that meets the statute. Excuse me, Your Honor.
I understand you're arguing with me about the language in the statute. I mean, the language in the contracts, which we have to read. But my question is, if somebody who doesn't own a car comes in and says, I don't own a car, but I want to meet the financial responsibility statute, and sometimes I operate cars, give me a policy, would that person receive the same policy that Jennifer received in this case?
No. She would receive what she received in this case, which was an owner's policy of liability insurance. It's insured the person named therein against loss arising out of ownership, maintenance, and use of the vehicle. An owner's policy, by definition, requires liability coverage for liability resulting from the operation of any vehicle not owned.
Right.
And exclusion number...
I'm not trying to be difficult. I just want to know... And you're arguing me the language in the contract that she was actually given. But does America, maybe I'll ask it a different way. And I'm not trying to trick you, I'm trying to figure out what the facts are. Does American Family issue a different form policy for people who are just operators of vehicles? And if so, is that in the record anywhere?
American Family can issue an operator's policy of liability insurance as defined by the statute, but I respectfully submit that this is an owner's policy.
The question is, does the record reflect that the company does that as a matter of fact, not whether they can? Does the company offer a separate operator's policy that is different from the owner's operator's policy this young woman purchased?
And I don't know if the record reflects that. I certainly have heard of situations of operators' policies being issues, but I've never seen one.
It makes all the sense in the world. I mean, besides the idea of being financially responsible, if you're an operator, you don't want to get sued. If you get sued, I mean, if this person has an accident and they're operating a vehicle, they can get sued. They want insurance. That's what insurance is about.
And in this case, the accident vehicle policy insured both the owner and the operator, and they paid the limits.
What did she get for her money? What did she get for her premium here?
She got coverage for a defined vehicle, the 1990 Pontiac, and she entered a contract.
And she got no coverage for operating other cars?
No, she was paid. She wasn't insured under the accident vehicle.
But she, under her premium, got no coverage for operating other cars?
There were certain non-known vehicles that, in addition to the 1990 Pontiac, that she would be covered for. But exclusion number 9, which has been upheld by all the districts, specifically indicates that she would not be covered for vehicles that are owned by other residents.
But we're talking about coverage first, because the $25,000 applies. You can't exclude the $25,000. So she got no coverage for operating other cars, you're saying?
Under these facts, Judge, there was no coverage under the 1990 Pontiac policy because of exclusion 9 and the anti-stacking. We believe exclusion number 9 is contrary to the household exclusion. It doesn't limit the people who can make claims. It specifies that certain vehicles will not be covered. I believe that the 1990 Pontiac policy meets the minimum statutory definitional requirements of an owner's policy. In Clark, this court was faced with two vehicles a leased Chevrolet Blazer that they paid a limit on, and then a Ford Mustang. And the appellants are asking this court to apply not the two-step analysis in Clark, which determined the clause effectively precluded stacking, and the prohibition on stacking did not violate Missouri public policy, but actually the three-step process in Hargrave. And the problem with that is Hargrave involved the household exclusion. The household exclusion specifically excludes claims by individuals. Exclusion number 9, which has been upheld by all the districts, applies only to specified vehicles, and in fact, it's consistent with the statutory objective that every automobile have insurance coverage. If Jennifer McConville was operating her 1990 Pontiac, or a vehicle, a non-owned vehicle that was defined to have coverage, and she was involved in an accident, there would be coverage. However, exclusion number 9 and the anti-stacking clause are enforceable.
So would she have had any, I think opposing counsel said, had she not paid a separate premium, had a separate policy, she would have exactly the coverage she has, you're saying she has now, is that correct?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
You're saying the coverage she has is under her parents' policy and it's exactly the same as it would be had she not bought her own policy.
I disagree. But
explain how you disagree so I understand it.
Okay. I don't believe the 1990 Pontiac policy provides coverage for this accident. And when you're asking me questions about does it provide coverage, under certain circumstances, subject to exclusion number 9 and the anti-stacking, it would provide coverage. In this accident, no. It's not like Hargrave, where the insurer was trying to use the MBFRL to nullify coverage, and it was excess. Rather, the appellants are trying to distort the MBFRL and clear contractual terms and stack the 1990 Pontiac policy, which again is not the accident vehicle, with the 1998 Pontiac policy. 303-1907.
Doesn't that argument assume that this court would determine that the policy was an owner's policy, and that if this court would after reviewing the facts determine that this was an operator's policy, that would somewhat undercut that argument?
I can
based upon the language of the financial responsibility statute.
Yes, just like Clark, I'm assuming that this court will apply the definitions of the owner's policy and the operator's policy and find that the 1990 Pontiac policy and the 1998 Pontiac policy meet the statutory minimum definitional requirements of an owner's policy.
Why do you say that if it could meet your definition of an owner's policy, it can't be an operator's policy? Because she was operating a non-owned car.
Operator's policy is a term of art, Judge, that requires insurance of any motor vehicle not owned by her. And because exclusion number 9 is specific, I believe that this policy is not, nor could it ever be intended to be, an operator's policy as defined by the MBFRL. It does meet the statutory definitional requirements of an owner's policy under the MBFRL.
Why does this policy have any coverage language in it then for operators only?
Because under 303-190.7, there's freedom of contract. And once you meet the statutory minimum definitional requirements of an owner's policy, marketplace controls. And people want additional operators provisions. And that was cited in Clark. There were additional operators provisions. But again, I submit to this court that exclusion number 9, the very terms of it, are contrary to the statutory definition of an operator's policy.
Can you explain to me? I'm getting confused. If this is a policy that by its language defines itself as an owner's policy, which is your argument, correct?
It meets the statutory definition requirements, yes.
Okay. It's an owner's policy.
Yes.
And this young woman was not an owner.
That's correct.
What were you doing selling it to her?
Because owner's policy of liability insurance ensures the person named therein. It doesn't use the word owner. 303-190-22.
Wait. Answer my question.
She was insured under the definition of an owner's policy of liability insurance.
But she wasn't an owner and you knew it. Your company knew it. There's no car she's listed as owning.
That's correct.
And you're telling us you sold her intentionally a policy that only applied to owners.
No, Your Honor.
All right. Then explain what you're talking about.
Thank you.
You're talking awful fast and making no sense.
Okay. Your Honor, what I'm submitting is that The appellants are asking the court for a very narrow definition of owner's policy of liability insurance. Owner's policy of liability insurance is specifically defined by the MVFRL, and instead of the word owner within the definition, it says the person named therein. And then it insures for ownership, maintenance, or use of any such motor vehicle. As recently, within the last year, in the Eastern District, in Mound, the injured party argued that Hargrave effectively overruled Clark. And the court found that Hargrave did not overrule Clark. And just as in this case, the statutory scheme for the MVFRL provides a mechanism through uninsured motorist claims and the statutorily sufficient compensation that's required, the minimum limits, for cases like this. In Whitehead, the court...
Just to clarify, are you... because I think I know what... I'm not getting this from your argument, but I think what you're saying is because she would come within... that owner is defined as someone also in the household of the person who owns the car, so because her parents have an owner's policy, she's considered an owner?
Right? No, Judge.
I still don't understand how can she be under... where she doesn't own a car, how does she come within the definition of owner in the policy?
Your Honor, I'm looking at the definition, the minimum definitional requirements of an owner's policy of liability insurance, which is one of the options to satisfy financial responsibility under the MVFRL. Uh-huh. And that definition does not require that it only includes
an owner. Does an operator's, every operator would come within that definition under your interpretation. That second clause in the MRVL would be pointless, wouldn't it? Because the way you're defining owner, everybody's an owner.
No, I would disagree. I'm not using the word owner in my definition. I'm saying any person named therein. Jennifer McConville's parents put a policy
That's
in her name, and they own the vehicle. It's just like the case in Whitehead. And in Whitehead, the Western District found that met the statute.
But they want to insure her. I mean, if Judge Price is confused, I'm clearly confused. But and if they want to,
well, their parents. Traditional doctrine.
my headache. But in car seat, I mean, it's to protect the victim, and also the parents want to protect her because the car seat could sue the owner and could sue the operator if she is. And so they want to protect her. The parents want to protect her. Bought this policy, so she's got $25,000 of protection from getting sued. There's nothing here that says she can get sued. You're saying she's not insured for it, and they paid for the insurance.
I'm saying that the MVFRL was met because the owner of the accident vehicle fulfilled his obligation when he took out the 1998 Pontiac. And
so she got nothing for her premium, even though she had a separate premium, which she paid under, I think, something saying owner/operator's policy.
No, we're saying that we have a valid exclusion here, exclusion number 9.
You're saying it provides no coverage.
I mean,
in fact, if you exclude all coverage, you don't provide coverage.
So the coverage she did get was for any car that she drove.
I'm sorry, Judge.
The coverage that she did get that she paid for was for any car that she did herself drive that was not otherwise insured.
And I apologize, I'm not following you.
No, the coverage of the policy that you sold her,
right,
was coverage for her driving a car which she did not own and that the owner did not have insurance on.
I don't.
No, they're asking the question about what coverage she had. I was just trying to figure out what coverage she had.
Okay, she had coverage for the 1990 Pontiac and any and certain non-owned vehicles within the definitions of the policy.
What insurable interest did she have? In other words, if she didn't own the vehicle and she got sued, couldn't you even bring up the issue that she did not have an insurable interest in a vehicle she didn't own? I mean, I can't insure your vehicle for me to drive, can I?
Judge, I believe that the analysis needs to be the legislative intent of the MVFRL, and if the statutory minimal definitional requirements of either an owner's or operator's policy are met. And I believe the owner's policy that her parents took out and named her in satisfies that.
But it clearly meets the operator's policy definition.
And I would respectfully disagree. I think operator's policy requires that it insures her for any motor vehicle owned by, or any motor vehicle not owned by her. And
well,
I think.
Go ahead.
Well, I think exclusion number 9 is proof that it's not an operator's policy as defined
by
the MVFRL.
But in fact, she doesn't own the vehicle.
That's correct. Okay. And this court is confusing the word owner and operator outside the context of the definitions that have been provided by the legislature. And 303190.
Well, but no, you just told me the legislature provided the definition of operator as driving a vehicle you don't own. So aren't I exactly with the definition of operator's policy in the statute?
Operator's policy is liability coverage for liability from the operation of any motor vehicle not owned by you.
Yes.
And this policy doesn't meet those minimum requirements.
Well, because she didn't own the vehicle and she was operating it. Why didn't it exactly meet it?
Because of exclusion number 9. Because exclusion number 9.
Exclusions can't take the place of coverage. Those are different issues. We're asking what coverage it provided. That's a different issue than whether it excluded it. Because you can't exclude the $25,000. Doesn't it have to provide the $25,000 because she was an operator who was operating a vehicle she does not own? Therefore, under Merville, it had to provide $25,000. And your exclusion cannot exclude that $25,000. I'm talking about what it covered.
And we believe it covered the coverage required by an owner's policy. We don't believe 303 requires that you have to do both, that just because you use an operator provision that you have to provide an operator's coverage.
Well, I was going to say, so you think that somebody can satisfy the vehicle responsibility law by buying a policy which doesn't provide them coverage so long as it meets the definition of the policy approved by the legislator?
No, Your Honor. I believe the requirements of the MVFRL were met in this case, and I'm not saying that the 1990 Pontiac policy never provides coverage. I'm saying that we have a valid exclusion and anti-stacking language, which are different than the household exclusion. And I believe that the MVFRL was fully satisfied in this case because the owner supplied financial responsibility with an owner's policy, and we paid under that. The operator had no obligation under the MVFRL per Clark and per the statute. Absent owner's coverage, the operator's requirement to get additional coverage never kicks in.
Thanks for being a good sport responding.
Absolutely. Tough set of questioning. Thank you for your responses.
I just have one question. I have one question for clarification. Is you got the 3 points on Hargrave. He says there's 3 points in Hargrave. You said there are four. What's your fourth point on
that? I'm sorry. Oh, on Hargrave?
Right.
I think the fourth point with regard to Hargrave as to why it should apply is that it promotes the longstanding policy in Missouri that indicates that since a contract of insurance is intended to protect, when reasonably possible, you interpret to construe to find the protection rather than to defeat it. I think that was the fourth point that I was trying to.
And then the second question is, we're trying to figure out whether or not they sold operators' policies. Is that in the record at all, whether they sold operators' policies?
No. First of all, this is the standard insurance policy form that they have sold for many years. There is zero in the record that indicates that this is an operator's or an owner's. It's the same policy regardless of who buys it. And they know that. And second point is this. Even if he were correct that this was a, quote, owner's policy, and again, this isn't the insurance company that can define it. It's the legislature. And what the legislature defines as an owner is somebody who is in actual physical possession of the title. She doesn't have the title. She is not an owner. An owner is defined by this statute under 303.0208 as the person in actual physical control of the car. It is undisputed that she is in actual physical control of the car, so she is clearly an operator. But even if she wasn't, even if somehow you were able to distort this, and I won't get into the logical gap in their argument, what they're doing is they're defining an entity not by the definitional components, but by what is required by it. But even if you say that it was an owner's policy, Hargrave deals with two owners' policies. And Hargrave says each valid owner's or operator's policy. So in a sense, the argument doesn't matter, because you have already announced the rule, and if you want to slash through operator or owner, because it says or, it's the disjunctive, not the conjunctive, it basically says each valid Missouri policy must provide the statute.
Well, and that goes to the basic argument I think he's saying is since there's an owner's policy, you don't need to have a second minimum $25,000. Why do you say you do?
Because that's exactly what the Hargrave statement has said. In other words, their argument was exactly the same Hargrave, this same insurance company. You only need one. That's what their argument was. And what you said in Hargrave was there is no statutory limitation that says there is only one. That's a direct quotation from the Supreme Court case in Hargrave saying they could have easily said it's restricted to one, but it isn't. And so they applied it so there were two owners' policies each applied, or three owners' policies each applied.
If it doesn't matter if it's owners or operators, how come we're spending so much time talking about that here?
I'll tell you why. Because there is an absolute irreconcilable conflict between an operator, which he clearly is, and an operator's policy, which says you must insure somebody for the operation of a non-owned vehicle. They realize they cannot get around that argument. And so what they have said is we have Exclusion 9 that says you cannot insure for a non-owned vehicle. And then we have the statute that says if it's operators, you must insure for a non-owned vehicle. So they have tried to devise an argument to say Jennifer McConville, who is clearly an operator and clearly not an owner, is in fact an owner, even though the outcome is not determined by that, because in Hargrave there were two owners and both of them applied.
But the insurance agent sold them two policies anyway.
Correct. Thank you.
Okay, the cases are under submission.